You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Dean Erdman. Dean, thanks so much for being with me today.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Dean, of course, we're talking about your really fascinating show at Vitrium, and I want to jump right into it. So let's talk about this process. This, to begin with, this looks like a show that, you know, required a lot of commitment, right? You've been working on this particular project for quite a while. Is that correct?
Yeah, I've been working on this for many years now. I started working on fabricating an ATV completely out of glass in late 2019. And then with COVID-19, had to take a couple of years break for life things. And then had this exhibition scheduled for November of 2025. But my studio caught on fire in Red Hook in September of 2025. And so I lost a large portion of the work. So, you know, fire has been kind of integral in the making of the work and the destruction of the work. Just kind of fire all around.
Wow. So let's talk about fire a little bit. I'm so sorry to hear, for one, about that studio fire. I'd like to talk about it, though. I mean, like you say, fire is a big part of this project. You're using glass and hand blowing and kilns and everything else. What happened to the work during the fire? It obviously wasn't all destroyed, but it was partially destroyed.
Yeah, so we were on the top floor of the Red Hook Artists building on Van Brunt Street. And so we lost everything in our fire, which for me was a series of glass books that had survived a fire that had just come back from Los Angeles, and a number of parts from the ATV that I'd been working on, including the tires and the handlebars, the grill, and some other parts that aren't included in this exhibition. I think the interesting part, well, I try to find interesting parts, I suppose, in the way that fire has kind of surrounded this project, which is that fire doesn't burn glass. Like, it doesn't burn like another material like wood or paper. It transforms it again. And so there's some kind of latent object that has like some sort of touch of mine and my team that's, you know, still present, still out there, probably melted a bit. And then when the cold water, you know, shocked it, it cracked or broke. But in some way, it still sort of like holds a trace of itself. And now it's sort of out there, you know, gone rogue.
But gone rogue in a sense that it's kind of in the air, or in the case of like the glass books that you said were destroyed, what does that mean? Those books are in a different form. They became kind of melted in your studio. What happened to the glass books?
Yeah, the glass books are fabrications like one-to-one from books from Magnus Hirschfeld's archive, the Institute for Sexual Science. And these books survived the raid and the mass book burning in 1933. They had been in a show called Sciencia Sexualis that was curated by Jean Beccaro and Jennifer Doyle at the ICA LA. And so they had just come back, and so they were all in their crate. So they're handmade. I used photogrammetry to take sort of images of the original books so that I can refabricate them in glass. Again, a material that won't burn per se, but transforms. So the books were there. It was the thing I was really trying to find and get access to through drones and things, but it was just impossible. So they became, you know, embedded and enmeshed with all the other materials of the building, and now they are in a site unknown, but still in some way, you know, probably partially books, but I haven't seen them, and I won't see them probably ever again. So it's really like a flicker, like a memory flicker or something. But they're present. They're just, I guess that's why I call them like a latent form. They're sort of traveling around in spaces unknown.
Right. Unlike wood, you know, which is burned and kind of goes into another form altogether. You're saying, right, the glass is never destroyed. That's what's kind of unusual about the material. It transforms, but it's sitting there in a blob somewhere mixed with something else. in a form that will last millennium, I imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really good. That's really interesting. And so you said those books can be reconstructed through the photograms, although you use another word, right? And that's a technique that's also used in this show. Can you tell me how they would be constructed and what the photo, did you say photograms or photogrammatics that you were making?
Yeah, photogrammetry. So photogrammetry, I know, sorry, I didn't even think about the photogram and the photogrammetry. Just other forms of image making and thinking of the glasses lenses, I think, for myself. But photogrammetry is a kind of pragmatic way photogrammetry is a pragmatic way for me to make some of the work that's really challenging, either materially unavailable, like I can't take a mold from an object because it's old or fragile, or the object is incredibly complex, like the engine. So I take many high-res images and then compose a 3D model and then output that and then follow a lost wax casting process from that model. So the photogrammetry, basically takes, you know, many still images and recomposes them into like a dimensional space, so a three-dimensional space. So thinking of images sculpturally, I think is something I've done for quite a long time. And so photogrammetry really made sense to me as I was, you know, sort of oscillating back and forth between, you know, image making and sculptural space, you know, images aggregate, images architecture. And so photogrammetry became both pragmatic and I think conceptually interesting to think about as a protocol.
And the sculpture that we're looking at in the show, I mean, there's a number of things in here, right? There's this photogrammetry. I mean, and just correct me if I'm wrong, but there's also these glass sculptures, basically the Quad Warrior, there's the CC engine, the handlebars, and nearly the entire vehicle. This is almost entirely glass in the exhibit, right, in terms of the sculpture? There's also some metal framework here?
Yeah. All the ATV parts are glass, though there is, yes, a metal armature that is holding the fenders, the engine cover, the grill, the seat, the handlebars, that kind of like topography of the top of the object. And then there's more metal that's holding the glass engine that's fabricated completely in glass as well.
So let's talk about the ATV itself, right? This is an object, a vehicle that obviously you've been thinking about for over 6 years. And and to speak to just its form, and I know there's a lot in here for you, but to me, the ATV has at once this kind of sexiness to it. You know, there's something very attractive about a vehicle like this that looks fun, that looks, you know, I guess kind of macho in a way. And it's also a destroyer of the land, right? It's this kind of tool that is or vehicle that's, you know, very destructive. So if we can we speak to the sexuality of this object, of this vehicle? The books you said were also, you know, in a sense about sexuality, the glass books. Is there an aspect of the ATV that relates to if we can go there, sexuality?
Yeah, I think the ATV is very sexy, and I think it's extremely, you know, kind of erotic as an object in this exhibition. So, you know, it definitely seduces. And, you know, in terms of gender and sexuality, it's also composed of fragments that come together and sort of transform itself. When you're looking through the fenders and you see the tire, when, you know, the object like sort of changes itself when you approach it from a different perspective. The work is also, you know, fragile. Glass breaks, and so I think the combination of masculinity and fragility, or even just, you know, to get much more broader, more broad, you know, gender, bodies and fragility, and then that sort of echoes back onto the land and how, you know, we've come to use certain spaces like deserts, which is where I grew up, and almost, you know, discipline them as military bases, as detention centers, as data centers, as logistic centers for shipping, instead of a kind of geologically dense time that is rather incomprehensible. I might not have said that in a way that...
No, that makes sense. Yeah, that's okay, because there's a lot going on here. So keeping with that kind of train of thinking, I mean, there's multiple threads of thoughts there about the kind of sexy aspect of the vehicle, but also the complexities and the complications and the fragility of it. The vehicle in the show, the sculpture, is in parts, right? The two wheels are off it, the engine's out of it, and more. Can you talk to me a little bit about that? Because obviously this could be displayed with what look like the wheels on it, what look like the engine inside it, and more. But there's this intention of taking it apart more, right? So that what we would view, you know, and I'm glad you also said, right, it's a very sexy vehicle, right? There's something about it that kind of like we want, or, you know, hard to describe exactly what that is, but it's there. And so what does it mean to have the engine outside of it and to have, you know, it be in a state that obviously isn't rideable? I mean, I know it wouldn't be anyway because it's glass, but still, where the wheels on it and the engine inside of it, it almost would feel like, wow, you know, we can get on this and go, but we can't. Can you tell me a little bit about that deconstruction, the intention there?
Yeah. I think to have the engine separate from the body is the part, you know, like the seat, the handlebars, these are like the kind of like tactile places where the body would touch the machine, would touch the ATV. But to remove its sort of source of power and to have that as a negotiation in the space and a conversation in the space, I think was a part of the fragmentation or the you know, the way that I oriented the objects in space to sort of emphasize that. Also, how often do folks see an engine, right? It's a very particular class of people that are looking at engines, those who are fixing them themselves or who that's their sort of work. And so to sort of bring the object out and to be able to peer through it, you know, I created these little portals through polishing the glass. So you can see the internal space of the engine. You can see through the engine. So it gives these different kinds of portals, thinking of it as a kind of a time machine in a way. And it is a time machine. It transforms fossil fuels into mechanical speed. So that we can fly across the desert or a landscape in Ohio or a landscape in Pennsylvania, you know, all terrain, right? And there's something, I think, kind of erotic and sexy about the idea of all terrain or the fiction of that freedom, right, which is like the anywhere that one can go anywhere, when so many other things are quite limited about, you know, what freedom means.
Right. You mean what freedom means in a political context?
Yeah, in a political context, even in a bodily context, right? Like, what is my freedom as a non-binary trans person who can't, you know, whose healthcare is being, under scrutiny by the U.S. government, or who young people can't access, life-saving care. So, freedom means something different to a lot of people, but I think that there's a sense of potency and there's a sense of individual ability that is also really tied into, I think, like an American ethos that sort of shapes around the ATV, which is that I can do this on my own. I have this power. I am also, you know, there's like a high that you get. Like, we kind of forget because, you know, we fly in an airplane, we're, you know, 500 miles an hour, we're sitting in our seat and we're watching, you know, some movie and we feel like we're just sitting in our living room. But you remove the windshield and your body is responding to the feeling of the landscape and to it being hurtled, in a speed that we've come to sort of soften. And so I was interested in the kind of tactility of how that speed feels in the body again. And I think that part is also, you know, the ATV holds some tension, right? It's an object that holds, as you said, the thing that destroys, you know, lands. And also it has a kind of like erotic and individual potential. It also has a communal potential. So I think of it as an object that can hold these conundrums, and they don't, I don't resolve them. I sort of let them stay together, because they do.
Yeah, of course. That's part of the, the contradictions of life, right? The push and pull of life, the, as you're saying, freedom versus no freedom, and what's happening within our bodies. So the engine itself, I mean, the whole ATV, of course, is pretty remarkable looking. The tires have a feeling all their own, which we could talk about. But to speak to the engine a little bit, this is kind of the heart of it, right? And this is displayed on a plinth separately up high. Not the way it would be displayed potentially at like a mechanic shop. So there's something else to this engine, right? This almost feels like a beating heart with its complexity. And I would imagine that, I don't know at all, but in terms of all the parts of this, that the engine has to be one of the more complex things for you to build here. Although I may be wrong, but yeah, can we talk about the engine a little bit and what that symbolizes on its own plinth, in its own way, as its own object that is also has a kind of sexual vibrancy of its own, right?
Yeah, absolutely. The engine was the most complex piece to make, and we made it in several parts because, you know, glass wants to flow in very particular ways, and so we had to work with the complexity of the shape of the engine and the complexity and material specificity of what glass wants to do and does. It is the heart, in a way, of the show, and it's been the centerpiece for me that I've sort of held on to, which is, it's also become a you know, you said heart, it's also a torso. There, it sort of sculpturally figures like a bust in the exhibition. And I wanted to think about, you know, as I was sort of talking about speed and tactility, there was something about not a futility, but I don't want to say conundrum again. We'll have to edit that. But a kind of like, maybe a series of contradictions. I wanted to make something that wasn't made by hand. I wanted to make a mass-produced object, you know, with a series of people and a difficult material, because I wanted to think about the potency of the machine, the potency of the transformation of oil, for example, right, in both, like, physical, social, and environmental space. It also, I think, in the time that it took to make it, when I think about the engine now, I think about it as a kind of like a diamond or a gem or something. Like it almost transformed in its duration of making into this other thing. I often call my work fossils for the future, in which they become excavated from some future landscape and to be understood. And so I've been thinking about, like, what does it look like in a future to understand the role of engines, the role of speed, the role of fuel, I guess. And to sort of think about that in hindsight and all the ways that that's really transformed, you know, our landscape, our world, our geopolitics. So just to sort of take a pause and just, you know, I made the engine into an optical device for that very reason. So it's a microscope or a telescope, right? It's like, it's some other kind of scopic device that is looking somewhere that you're still, or I at least, am still kind of discerning. But I wanted to create that pause, and I thought that, you know, if the object took this long to make, its labor would be evident. Also, its labor is evident, but it's also like kind of elegant. But it's time. I wanted the feeling of time when you are with it, when you engage with it, when you think through it or with it.
Yeah, that's That's so interesting, and thanks for sharing that with me. I just want to say for listeners, of course, there's links here to learn more, and hopefully you can go see the show because it's so important to see this. I want to ask you one more question before we go, a little off topic. What are you reading at the moment?
I am reading Vince Beiser's The World in a Grain, and my next book to read is Medium Hot by Hedo Steirel, which is Images in the Age of Heat. And I kind of can't wait to get to that because it feels like we have a conversation to have, Hedo
Thanks so much. I want to thank you for talking with me today. I really appreciate your time here. And of course, this show is running through April 18th. So hopefully listeners can go check it out. It's really important to see this. Thanks so much, Dean, for your time and work.
I. Thanks so much. It was a pleasure to talk.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.